Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network on Saturday, April 7th, 2018. This is episode 1477. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by TurboTax Live. New from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/Tech Guy. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. And by 23andMe, a personal genetic service helping people understand their DNA. Buy your 23andMe kit today at 23andme.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk, you know, about tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, augmented reality. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536. If you want to talk about tech, I'd love to talk about it with you. It's a call-in show. Really wouldn't be the same if you didn't call in, so... Kim Schaffer's there waiting for your call, 8888-ASK-LEO. I also have a website that you can join in on, techguylabs.com. That's free. And so, and no sign up or anything. So you can use that. If you hear me say something and you don't want to write it down, or you'd like to write it down, but you're driving, whatever, you don't have to worry. Just remember, techguylabs.com. We'll get everything written down for you. Today, I think it'll be a little delayed. James Ruvo is on his way to Las Vegas for NAB, so he's our guy. He's my transcriptionist. He'll get to it later in the day, but it'll all be up there by the end of the weekend. TechGuyLabs.com. There's also a fun chat room that you can join that's family-friendly. We've got nice moderators in there keeping it clean. It's our community. It's not really my thing. It's run by the community. I like that. Tech Guy Labs. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Well, you can get the link at techguylabs.com, but it's if you want to go directly to the chat room, it's irc.twit.tv. irc.twit.tv. Boy, Facebook is continually in the news this week. I don't know if I have anything more to say about it except that it's just a mess. That's what I have to say about it. It's just a mess. Article in Wired magazine this week by Zeynep Tufekci, who is I really like her stuff. She really is paying attention to what's going on in social media and how it impacts us and so forth. She's a sociologist. She studies it in a university setting. Zeynep makes an interesting point in her Wired article. She says, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, the founder and CEO, and by the way, the only guy who matters at Facebook because he is the, sorry about that, I got a little frog. He is the sole, he's got voting control. He's arranged it all along. This is rare. You hear stories about startups where the founders are so desperate to get some cash that they sign over big chunks of their ownership to venture capitalists. That's pretty much, the way it's done. And in many cases, the venture capitalists end up having so much controlling stake in a company that they'll oust the founders. That happens more often than not. Going back to Steve Jobs being fired at Apple, remember? That's very common. Bringing in adult supervision, the venture capitalists often call it. Well, Mark didn't want that to happen. He started Facebook as a freshman at Harvard, you may remember. And even when it went public, even when he took venture capital, he never gave enough shares away to lose full control of the company. So the only person who controls Facebook is Mark Zuckerberg. That's important to understand. There's a board of directors. There's Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer. There's, of course, a lot of people there. But there's only one voice that matters. That's Mark Zuckerberg's. He decides what happens. You know, even in any company, of course, the CEO is a big part of the, you know, the leadership directs the company. But in Mark's case, it's all him, baby. Zeynep's article is said titled, "Why Zuckerberg's 14-year apology tour hasn't fixed Facebook." You could go back to Mark's first program at Harvard in 2003 when he was a freshman. The first thing he wrote was something called Face Mash. Face Mash, if you saw the movie, I mean, remember the movie, The Social Network, wasn't very accurate, but roughly accurate in that case. He created a kind of hot or not. Do you remember that, where you'd put pictures up of people and they'd vote on whether that person was hot or not? Kind of really rude. He scraped images of students at Harvard from the school's website and then asked people to rate these people, mostly, I think mostly women, probably, right? Hot or not. Hue and cry resulted, and Mark had to write an apology. I think it ended up in the Harvard Crimson. Quote, and see how familiar this sounds. Quote, "I hope you understand this is not how I meant for things to go, and I apologize for any harm done as a result of my neglect to consider how quickly the site would spread and its consequences thereafter. I definitely see how my intentions could be seen in the wrong light." That's 2003. That's even before Facebook. That's Mark Zuckerberg's Face Mash. Compare that, let's say, to his apology in 2006 when the news feed launched and people were shocked that, you know, their personal stuff was being fed into people's news feed. Quote, "This is a big mistake on our part, and I'm sorry for it. We really messed this one up. We did a bad job of explaining what the new features were, and an even worse job of giving you control of them." That's 3 years later, 2006. Now, 2007, the Beacon advertising system. This is the one where your friends would get ads saying, "Leo just bought an electric razor. You should too." 50,000 Facebook users signed a petition saying, "Stop invading my privacy, Facebook." Mark Zuckerberg's apology, quote, "We simply did a bad job with this release, and I apologize for it. I'm proud of the way we've handled the situation, and I know we can do better." And on and on and on. There's a pattern here. There is a pattern here. Mark pretty much violates your privacy and apologizes after and then doesn't do anything about it and does it again. That's pretty much the way it is. I mean, I don't know why we believe anything that he says at this point. Now, a number of people pointed out, a guy named Siva Vaidyanathan, who's another esteemed professor, and I highly respect him, said, "Oh, it's white privilege to quit Facebook, because in the developing world, Facebook is needed to communicate, to connect people, and it's super valuable." And whatever did we do 8 years ago? I don't, in the dark ages, how did we communicate? How did we stay in touch? Whatever did we do? People act as if, oh, we couldn't survive without Facebook. It's relatively new. How did we manage in the early 2000s? How did we survive? I don't buy that. I really don't buy that. And I think Facebook has done some things I think are important. For instance, they say we won't allow anybody to buy political ads unless we can clearly identify them. That wasn't the rule before. Did you know that? Well, now you do. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk about Facebook again. It's mind-boggling. It really is mind-boggling. And then this news from the Department of Homeland Security, they're going to compile a database of journalists and media influencers, including podcasters and bloggers. Yeah, we just want to keep track of them. Just want to know what they're up to. They call it the Media Monitoring Services. What? They're going to track more than 290,000 global news sources as well as social media, over 100 languages. Journalists, editors, correspondents, social media influencers, bloggers, to identify any and all media coverage related to the Department of Homeland Security or a particular event. That's when I want to monitor. I monitor you. I got your monitor right here. Wow. We just, you know what? We have to kind of, eternal vigilance is the price of democracy, right? And privacy, apparently, as well. We'll take a break. Come back. Your calls, please. Give me a ring. Let's talk. What is on your mind? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls next. Oh, the time has come. I hate to say it. We've got a week from Monday, and then the IRS wants their money. Thank God there's TurboTax. That's all I can say. So I mentioned before, I do my mom's taxes. I did it last year with TurboTax. It was so easy. And the nice thing is this year, I just log into TurboTax, and all of her data is already there. So it's really fast to do it this year. She has a brokerage account. I logged into her Schwab account. It automatically imports the 1099-R. It imports from a lot of different places. You can even take a picture of the W-2 you get. You can take a picture of it. It'll import it. It makes it so easy. And by the way, that's more than easy. That means accuracy, because you're importing the data like that. You're not going to get typos because you typed a wrong number. You're going to get it all completely accurate. Now TurboTax has gone to the next level. I love this. TurboTax Live. You can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or an EA right on your screen. It's one-way video. They'll answer questions you have. You can even have them review your return before you file. It's peace of mind. It makes it really easy to do it 100% right, but it's nice to know a pro looked at it. Plus, they can give you advice for tax planning because the tax laws have changed dramatically for 2018. And of course, it's always backed by a 100% accuracy guarantee. That's TurboTax for you. My daughter found out that she had to pay taxes. She had her first job last year. She said, I have this W-2. What do I do? I said, honey, bring it on over. We'll do TurboTax together. It's a bonding experience. TurboTax Live. Connect with a TurboTax Live expert today at TurboTaxLive.com/tech guy. This is such a great idea. TurboTaxLive.com/tech guy. And we thank TurboTax not only for their support, but for making. I'm now a tax preparer. I got my wife. My wife does ours. Thank goodness. She's an EA, and it's a big company, so I don't want to do it. Thank God. Thank you, Lisa. But I do my mom's and I do my daughter's. I guess I'll be doing my son's too. Come to think of it, Turbo. You know what? Teach a man to fish. I'm going to teach him how to use TurboTax. TurboTax Live. .com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I don't know what those barking dogs are, Kim Schaffer.
I don't know why that.
Are they chasing
is in
that you?
Song.
Are they chasing you?
No, but
is that Alice in Chains?
Being caught cheating? No.
Who is that?
Jane's Addiction.
Jane's Addiction. I knew it was a woman's name.
Yeah. Not Alice Jane.
That's how the brain works.
Yeah.
Hello, Kim Schaffer. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday.
We've opened the lines, I believe.
We have.
And has the river of calls come? The Pineapple Express of phone calls.
Pineapple Express
comes through.
The atmospheric river.
That was what they called the rainstorm we had over the last few days in California, Northern California.
And in the East Coast, the nor'easter.
The nor'easter. A nor'easter of calls.
Yes, they have. How about we go to Atlanta, Georgia? Johnny bought the owl on your recommendation.
And Johnny bought the owl.
Johnny bought the owl.
Johnny bought the owl.
So now
thank you, Kim.
Tips.
Owl tips.
Owl tips.
Thank you. Hello, Johnny. Welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. So the owl is a dash cam that is a little different from many other dash cams. For one thing, it's a little more expensive. But more importantly, the way it works is kind of different because it ties to a phone app and it notifies. It has its own LTE built in, which is why it's a little more expensive. It also has a front-facing and a rear-facing camera. And it's just on. I have it in the front of my car. It's on all the time. And if you ever want to save something for posterity, like a giant comet hitting the Earth, you just say, okay, presto. And then it gives you the last 30 seconds or so. So what do you think so far?
Well, I don't know if you're watching the chat room right now, but you just named the new alt rock band.
Johnny Butt the Owl. I like it.
Well, Leo, anyway, I want to tell you this is my hat trick call to you.
Oh, good. Congratulations.
Kudos to Kim. She's always got me first, so I must be doing something right.
You call in early, probably, right?
Right, I do. I hit that redial button, yeah. So I think that helps a lot. Okay, yeah, I did get it, Leo. I got it this morning.
How exciting. You really just got it. Wow.
Yeah, you got it. You praised it, you know, a couple of months ago. Really loved it. When you said, hey, I've already tucked in the cables, that sold me.
That was serious.
I said, okay, because I'd already watched some videos of how you install it. I knew you had to stick those cables in there with their little poke tool, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got all the instructions manuals out, you know, when I got it today. I got my owner's manual. I drive a 2012 Audi Q12.
Nice.
Q5.
Very nice car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I got the owner's manual out to, you know, make sure I was looking in the right place for the onboard diagnostics port and everything like that. Now, in a big block, I wanted to read this to you and I want you to tell me if I need to be concerned about this. But in a big block in the owner's manual, it says, warning, do not use the diagnostic connector for personal use. Incorrect usage can cause malfunctions, which can increase the risk of a collision! !
No, that's the Audi owner's manual, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
They don't, you know, in fact, we've had other things connected to this. It's an onboard diagnostic port. And really, the main point of it, all cars since 96 have it. They're required to. And the main point of it is when you bring it to the dealer, you'll see them plug in the computer, the diagnostic computer to it, because it can read the engine systems. It's true. And I think what Audi's warning you, it's funny that Audi should be the ones that were cheating on the emissions test should be the one to warn you not to connect to the OBD2 port. Their legitimate concern, and I think the lawyers wrote this one, is that if you put something on there, it would have then access to some of the car's telematics systems and could, you know, cause problems. But that's not what you're doing. The OWL only draws power from the OBD2 port. I've actually used, there are a number of devices, and I've used them. There's a well-known one called Automatic, but there are others you can buy online that go on there and then communicate with your phone and will tell you things like fuel efficiency, give you additional information that you're not getting from the car otherwise. And I think that those are fine. I've used those for years. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. That sounds like Audi's lawyers being more worried that you'll do something that'll cause a problem. All that's coming off of that, if you're not using the OBD2 port for anything else, all that's coming off of that for the OWL is power. And the reason they choose that instead of, say, a cigarette lighter, well, A, because the wiring looks much nicer. You can get the wiring out of the way without having an installer do it. But B, you can't always be sure a cigarette lighter is always on. And one of the benefits of the OWL camera, I mean, you don't have to have this, but it's not just while you're driving. It also is on when you're not in the car and will sense a break-in or an accident.
Right, and I see that, and I see that green light flashing constantly.
Yes,
and if you look at their website, they says, "Oh, that's going to scare off the people from breaking in because they know you got a camera in there." But I'm thinking too, why is that not going to alert them and say, "Hey, there's a nice little electronic device sitting here on this dash. Why don't I just break in?"
Well,
and
I think the OWL folks were worried about this because they also say, "And if your OWL camera is ever stolen from your car, we'll replace it free."
Okay, good.
So, and
if I'm a thief, that light's just a flashing. Like, I'm gonna go get that thing.
Yeah, you know. But here's the deal: that you will also have very nice crystal clear HD video of them taking the camera, because even before you say okay, presto, if there's an event, an accident, or a break-in, the OWL immediately starts transmitting first stills and then later video to the OWL site. So it's recording itself being stolen. This is the same question people ask me about the video doorbells, about the video cameras on the house. What if the thief just takes it? Well, that's right. True, but then you'll have video of them taking it. So it's kind of already accomplished its mission. Nobody's broken into my car. I've had it for a month. There are some surprising things that happen. The owl, when you get in the car, will snap a video of you getting in. And it has two bright LEDs in the front, which will often light up to, because if it's in the dark, it will light up to catch your face. So that's a little disconcerting. Also, I think the software is not completely done. I notice it doesn't, some of the functionality isn't there yet. I think that's an easy thing to fix in the app.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about the iOS, the iPhone.
I'm not getting the notifications I'm supposed to get. I get some, but not all.
Do you leave location services on for all time for that app?
Yes. Hold on a second. I got to take a break, but let's continue talking. I'll give you some of my usage tips. Okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson coming up. So, yeah, I do. I don't, this is something sometimes people don't like. And you're obviously on iOS because iOS will always bug you. Hey, you know, the owl is following you around. Is that okay? There's two concerns.
I just
about
to make sure.
I leave it on. There's two concerns about that. One is privacy, of course. And nowadays we're all very concerned about that. The other one is battery. But I leave it on because, among other. Oh, they just updated the software. I just see some new software, so that's good.
And just by the way, one of the frustrations for me when I did install it, I don't know if this happened to you, that thing kept rebooting itself and rebooting itself at least four or five times as it got all these updates.
Yes,
that'll
settle down. The only two annoyances I have now are that the owl. If it's in the sun, it will shut itself down. It'll say it's too hot out here to protect itself. And I do get notifications about that whenever it's shutting down. It lets me know, which is fine. And the other thing is occasionally it will just record a clip, maybe because it thinks it heard OK Presto or whatever. But, and you only get 30 clips a month. But what I found is it rolls over clips, which is nice. And I haven't run out of clips after the first week, you stop just recording stuff randomly.
By the way, when I got the email telling me that my shipment was on the way, there's a little link in there that says open your order. And when you open your order, it has a pop-up box, and it wants you to enter your email and the model and make of your car. And so I was thinking, it's going to send me special instructions for my car.
Right.
But I never got an email from them. So I called them this morning after I got it, saying, am I supposed to be getting special instructions? And the guy, I don't know how big a company this is.
I think it's pretty small. It's a startup.
Yeah, I think I woke the guy up.
What, you bought it? You bought the camera? Why?
Yeah. And so at the end of the conversation, I said, now I want you to know. I said, I would not have bought this camera had Leo Laporte.
Oh, thank you.
I strongly recommend it. And he says, who? I said,
Lord.
The tech guy. And I said, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He says, well, let me write that down. I said, y'all need to consider, advertising.
Thank you.
You're looking
for. Thank you.
And I said, because, a lot of people follow his advice.
I haven't tried a lot of dash cams, but I like this. Now, I haven't had occasion to use it, but if I ever get in an accident, I really feel like this will be great to have this,
Yeah. I mean, it gives you kind of a peace of mind.
Yeah. And if you had a teenager driving the car, this would be a very good thing to have in the car.
We've had some car break-ins in my neighborhood over the last few months.
There you go.
So, it'd be nice that it'll record that.
In theory, it will. It's always recording me getting in the car. It thinks it's a break-in when I get in the car. So it must. Now, see, here's something it recorded in a parking lot. I wasn't in the car. Maybe somebody, it had a motion sensor, but if somebody backed into me, I would have video of that, plus a clear view of their driver's their license plate. So I think that's kind of handy, frankly.
So you keep yours on almost the whole time while you're driving?
Never turn it off.
Okay.
And so there's one more feature, which they don't really promote, but it's pretty funny, is you can talk to somebody in the car. You can, if somebody else is driving your car, like your teenager, you can see them. You can turn it on and see them, and you can talk to them.
Right.
that's quite a hoot. It looks like they've updated their app a little bit with some more stuff,
but it has to go. I see you have it up. it always goes into landscape mode, and it won't let you switch over to
mode. Right,
it's kind of an aggravation to me a little bit, but you know, that's just a minor.
Well, they're wide, pictures, so I guess they don't. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm getting used to it. So I'll call you back in about a month or so and let you know.
Would you? I would appreciate that. What I really want to know is if you have an incident and how it worked. Because I haven't had one, and I'm trusting that it'll work. Now, God forbid, and I hope nothing happens, but if it does, let me know.
Okay, I will, Leo.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you. Take care, Johnny.
All
righty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Go to bed. Bump, dear bump. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And whenever I hear that music, even if I just hear it on the street, I start looking around for Scott Wilkinson. So where is he? He's here somewhere. Scott Wilkinson's our home theater geek. He joins us every week to talk about getting the best audio and video in your life. I think I mentioned this last week, Ready Player One, also now in an Atmos theater, and I'm totally craving Atmos at home. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for the connection to the ELAC folks, because I am definitely going to get an ELAC set up in there with the upward firing Atmos speakers, because you just put those. I like those because I don't have to mount them in the ceiling. I can just put them on top of the left and right speakers. It'll fire up at the ceiling.
Yep, yeah. Exactly, and then reflect back down.
Yeah, yeah, they're at an angle, like it's bouncing at me. It's
right,
cool. Yeah,
yeah, extremely cool.
As you're probably gathering if you listen to this show, I'm kind of a sucker for stuff like that. But you convinced
me. And I'll steer you right. You know, yeah. I mean, if you're not sure, you know, I'll say, yeah, that's good. No, yeah. You want to stay away from
you
that.
You convinced me. So tell me what's going on in your world, Scott.
Oh, we have some sad news today, I'm afraid.
Oh, no.
You're familiar with the company Oppo?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Makers of, I think, the finest Blu-ray and Ultra HD Blu-ray players on the market.
Yes, we've recommended them for several years now.
Indeed, we have. They announced this week that they are closing their doors.
What?
Sad, what? Very sad news. However, I have to say, I give them a ton of credit. They are one of the highest rated companies not only in terms of their product, but also in terms of their customer support. And they have pledged, they have made a promise. Look, we're not going away in terms of customer support. Our last products are going to roll out of our manufacturer in, I think, June or so. But we're going to continue. You get a 2-year warranty, and we're going to honor that warranty for the 2 years.
The front page on their website says, farewell, Oppo Digital, to gradually stop making stuff.
Yeah.
We're gradually fading away.
I know. I thought that word gradually
was very odd.
Pretty odd.
Now, this is a Chinese company. Now, one thing that does concern me, they're also, they have a spinoff called OnePlus that makes a very popular Android phone. I wonder.
That's not going away.
Yeah.
As far as I know,
we established Oppo Digital in the United States. I thought it was Chinese.
It's a U.S. company.
Ah.
I believe they probably do their manufacturing in China.
Well, who doesn't?
But who doesn't?
Who
exactly.
Doesn't? Okay, so this is an American company. Did they say why? Is business bad?
Or? Yes, they said that the revenue does not support continued product development and production.
Holy cow.
That's what they said. I asked them. I said, what's happening here? And that's exactly what they told me. The revenue just isn't supporting continued product production and development.
It's probably the case that people don't buy DVD players much anymore, right?
Well, and this goes directly to the discussion that you and I have had many times about the viability of physical media as opposed to streaming.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're right. Sales of discs is probably down. These players are pretty expensive as players go. They're in the $500 range.
That's the other problem, because you can get a Samsung or somebody else's for
$100.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's a well-known brand name. Yeah.
Yes, but they're made with plastic instead of metal.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily support. I mean, Oppo released firmware updates all the time. If they found a disc, an individual disc, if somebody out there found an individual disc that was incompatible with their player, boom, they came out with a firmware update that fixed it.
So I understand now the chat room's giving me the clarification. Oppo is a U.S. subsidiary of Oppo China, which is actually called BBK. And apparently Oppo phones in China are huge, and that business is not going away.
That's not going away. Okay. No, no, no.
So this is really the U.S. and pretty much the high-fidelity audio-video stuff.
Right.
Because they make headphones and speakers as well. Those are going away too.
Well, yeah, they make an Alexa-type speaker, you know, a Bluetooth, whole home, wireless kind of speaker thing. Right. That was kind of their last gasp.
Okay.
They tried to
get... So really, it's the DVD players, the UHD and Blu-ray.
Blu-ray players, yeah. Which can play... The other cool thing about them is they can play any physical disc you might have, including, obviously, Blu-ray, DVD, CD, Ultra HD Blu-ray, and even these more esoteric formats called SACD and DVD audio, which some people say, oh, those are dead formats. No one does those anymore. Well, it's not true. Some companies do put out SACDs. This is high resolution audio. We've talked about that before as well. And they still are being produced. And people have large collections of them. So, you know, those people need something to play them on.
See, here's Alex Gumpel, his Jerry Goldsmith Christus Apollo CD is hybrid multi-channel, plays in all SACD players.
Yeah, exactly.
It's SACD surround. I bet it sounds great.
Oh, phenomenal.
Yeah.
So now the question becomes, and there's a big discussion on AVS Forum about it, do you buy an Oppo player while you still can? Or do you not, because they're going out of business?
Well, one point to be made is their parent company, BBK, is not and is still very financially solvent.
Absolutely.
So that's
Absolutely.
One of the reasons I think we're going to continue to support these products. We're just not going to make new ones.
Right, exactly.
And I imagine support will go back to China. I wonder if some of this might have to do with tariffs as well.
Well, right? There's that question too, isn't there?
Because we know that Chinese products now are going to be
and in fact, there was several news stories this week, just a few days ago, about how that's going to directly affect the cost, the price, the consumer price of televisions coming from China.
Yeah.
And as we know... I think about half the imports of TVs into the U.S. are from China.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a problem especially for companies like TCL and Hisense, which are trying to make inroads into the U.S. market with their TVs, very low cost, very attractive priced TVs. But, you know, now they may not be quite so attractively priced.
You know, it could be a gesture from a Chinese-run company to say, hey, you know, you're going to do tariffs. Well, we're going to close our business. It could be actually that there is a problem that that they're not doing well.
I think they're not selling as many players as they probably had hoped.
Yeah.
I suspect that's probably the main thing. Another good thing, though, about what I think Oppo is being really good is that they have said we're going to continue to put out firmware updates as we can. For example, Sony TVs recently got a firmware update to support Dolby Vision. We've talked about Dolby Vision high dynamic range before, but that firmware update to the Sony TVs was a little strange. It was not standard, and so players like the Oppo that could do Dolby Vision couldn't do it on a Sony TV. They need to have a firmware update to do it on Sony TVs. And they're in the process of finishing that update as we speak.
Interesting.
It's actually in the Dolby testing phase. Yeah. So when that comes back, they're going to release it, even though they're no longer making players. So I got to give Oppo a lot of credit.
Yeah, this is not your typical shutting down business. They're going to really continue to support their products, which to me means you should treat this like maybe when the Pioneer folks decided to stop making Kuro TVs.
Exactly.
Run out and buy them while you still can. If you are a Blu-ray UHD player and you really want the latest, but of course in years to come, I don't think we'll see firmware updates continue forever.
No, not past couple of years.
It's really the perfect storm. You've got the tariffs, you've got the slide in people buying physical media, you've got the competition from low-cost UHD players. Yep. All in all, I'm not surprised. It is too bad, though.
But it's a sad day because I love my Oppo player.
We've been recommending them for years, thanks to you. Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, you'll find his work at avsforum.com. You can join the conversation there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow, that is sad.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
I find it just very sad.
Well, I'm going to give you the con here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And
point me to the
clock. I will.
To the clock, and we'll be fine. I'll keep an eye on it.
I shall. Whoa.
So Mike Heiss in the chat room. Hey, Mike. Good to see you here, as always. Left a link to current tariff items. Well, that'll be interesting to look at. Thank you, Tech Dino. Let's see. Steve W. is asking thoughts on the 2017 Samsung QF9. Actually, it's Q9F, except if you're in Europe, maybe. If you're overseas, it might be QF9, but in the U.S., it's Q9F. 2017, I am not thrilled with. 2018, I am. And the reason is that the 2017 Q9F, or Q9, used what's called edge lighting. And so the LEDs that provide the backlight for the picture are only along the edge. In fact, as I recall, I'm pretty sure this is true, not 100%, but close, they're only along the bottom, which is really strange. They should be at least along the bottom and the top, or all four sides, even better, but they're not. In the Q9, this is the Samsung flagship TV. And the problem with that is that the uniformity of the image on the screen is not good. And you get all kinds of weird effects like what we call flash lighting, which is it almost looks like there's a flashlight being shown if you're looking at a very dark image, like a night scene or outer space or something like that. Now, the 2018 Q9 uses a different type of backlight called FALD, F-A-L-D, full array local dimming. And what that is it's an array of LEDs behind the LCD panel. And those LEDs are arranged in zones, small little areas. Each zone can be independently dimmed or brightened. And that produces a much more uniform picture, especially in dark scenes, and better contrast generally, better black levels. So the 2018 Q9, I haven't reviewed it yet. My colleague Mark Henninger is, I think he just got his Q9, so he's about to start reviewing it. I am fully expecting it to be very good and much better than last year's Q9. So I don't recommend the Q7, the Q9 from 2017. Sadly. Let's see. Compter is asking, what projector screens do you recommend for similar projectors like the Sony VPL-VW-285ES? So that's their current quote-unquote low-cost. It's pretty low-cost, 4K projector, laser. I'm pretty sure it's laser. I'm not 100% sure about that now. I have to go back and look. But in any event, it's true 4K for $5,000, which is really pretty good. What kind of screen do you use with it? That depends on your environment. So if you have a dark environment with good light control, that is, you can block out any light that might be coming in during the day, or lights on at night or whatever. If you can block all that out and have a really dark room, and especially not with white walls, darker walls, then you get a screen like Stuart Studio Tech 130 or 100. Something like that. We'll talk more about it next after the top of the hour.
Can you stick around?
Sure can.
All righty, Scotty. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Boy, it really is. I think it's the case. It's really an indicator. I've said it for a long time, and people always yell at me when I say it, that physical media is dead. But it's really happening. People yell, oh, no, you know, I want my DVDs. I want my CDs. I want my Blu-rays. I want my dead tree books. And I sympathize. I want all of those as well. I love books. I have a lot of books. There's something about books. But we got to face the facts, Jack, that while many of us still have record collections, you have vinyl. I bet there's some who do. CD collections. It is absolutely the fact, no one will deny it, that the best quality ultra high def HDR comes on a disc. And for movies I really like, I still buy the disc, but it's a pain to move them around. And frankly, convenience trumps quality in most cases. And nowadays, you can stream anything you want. You can get ebooks for anything you want. I really think that that the era of physical media is starting to wane. Doesn't mean it'll go away completely. Somebody years ago said, you know, print newspapers, they're history. They're gone, and we've seen that happen too, right? It's just very hard to make money with a printed newspaper. But the same person, I wish I could remember who it was, also said, but there will always be a market, whether it's books, vinyl records, daily newspapers. There will always be a connoisseur market of people who will pay extra to keep the dead tree media or the dead dinosaur media alive. And I think that's probably the case. Nothing disappears entirely. You could still get a horse and buggy, right? There is still somebody out there making buggy whips. It's just not a big business anymore. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, on to line two. John in West LA. Hello, John.
Hi, Leo. I've been using Xmarx for quite a few years, and I just got a notification that that's being discontinued the 1st of May, and I'm looking for something similar to run.
So I think they got bought, didn't they? Xmarx was a bookmark syncing technology. I want to say that that Firefox bought it, didn't they? Who bought Xmarx?
LastPass.
LastPass did.
But I got a notification from LastPass that
they're going to kill it.
Yeah.
So I think one of the reasons is because all the browsers I know of do this. The nice thing about Xmarx, it was cross-browser. You know, you could have Xmarx installed on Firefox and Chrome, and they would have all the same bookmarks. So it was a really nice feature. But
yeah, that's what I have.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's funny because I bought Xmarx back in the day. I used it, and I really loved it. And I've just gotten kind of used to the idea that, well, when I use Chrome, Chrome's own built-in bookmark syncing will work. And, you know, when I install Safari or Edge or Opera or Internet Explorer or any of the alternate browsers, in most cases they'll say, oh, you want me to pick up your Chrome bookmarks? And I just do with that, even though, and then they sync, even though they get out of sync, right? Because as you add bookmarks to Chrome, they don't get added to Firefox. Yeah. It's a separate system. I think this is kind of analogous to the death of physical media. It's just, this is the problem that we pay as edge cases. We are not the majority. The majority of people, it's just too complicated to run a separate bookmark synchronization program, so they don't. I'm kind of disappointed that LastPass isn't keeping Xmarx around. Did they say when they sent you the notice that there's an alternative?
No.
I have been using for years, Delicious was around for a long time. It was a site that would keep track of your bookmarks, and I've been using Delicious got bought by Yahoo and also got trashed for a while. And I started using a system called Pinboard, pinboard.in. That's a paid system, and I actually liked that because I thought, well, this way they're going to stick around, and they have. They make money on it. And that's an external sync, not as useful. What you could do, this is crazy talk, but you could roll your own. I know, it's crazy talk, isn't it? But the idea of synchronizing a file or a folder isn't so far-fetched. A lot of people do that as part of their backup. You could store your Chrome bookmarks somewhere, or you could store actually a generic set of bookmarks somewhere in HTML. Chrome will read them. Everybody will read HTML bookmark files. That's what Chrome exports to, Firefox exports to. And you could make that your home page. So synchronize, in other words, you see what I'm saying? Synchronize those that external file and make that your home page. Let's see if somebody has come up with a solution. One of the things I liked about Pinboard was when Delicious kind of got bad, the community stepped forward. A guy said, hey, you know what? We need this, so I'm going to make it. But I think that people who keep track of bookmarks the way you do, and I know people like that, this is like one of their most valuable documents is their bookmark file. Like they spent years collecting these. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's all in there. Those people are, you know, I think a dwindling number. And I see this in technology. We're getting now, technology is mature enough that I'm seeing this more and more, like Oppo going out of business or Apple deciding, yeah, nobody wants a Mac. We're not going to update the Mac. There are a lot of people who want these things, but not enough. So I think you're going to have to figure out a solution of your own. I mean, each browser does this individually, but you use multiple browsers?
Right. I do on multiple computers.
Yep. Well, Chrome and Firefox both will sync to multiple computers, so you'll have a standard Firefox bookmark sync, and that'll be the same everywhere. And that's what I do with Chrome, and I just mostly stick with Chrome. I guess that's about the only choice. But if anybody's listening and has a solution for the demise of Xmark, that Xmark was a really, it's, you know, it's a little, this is a little bittersweet. It's kind of like Oppo going away. Times are changing. The times, they are changing. And that's just another way it's happening. It's kind of too bad. Let's see, line 3. Bill Fullerton, California. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
I'm great. So I have a Windows 10 machine. It's a Dell. I bought about a year and a half ago. It's been running really well.
Good.
And then a couple of months ago, I started noticing that the Windows apps are misbehaving.
What?
So
you mean the ones from Microsoft?
Right. So Windows Mail, Calculator, even Settings, sometimes you click on it, it opens up in a little tiny white window. You have to close it.
Oh, yeah. There's something wrong.
You open it. Yeah. And I've done you know, everything I've seen.
That's not normal.
A reset. No, it's not.
And the reset didn't work? You might have to do a full reset. Here, hang on a second, because I think I know what's wrong, and I can help you, but I have to take a break. News at the top of the hour. I think you're in what we call DLL hell. But I will help you in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, what that sounds like to me, and this is unfortunately way easy on Windows. Those programs all use a central library for drawing windows.
Okay.
And if that library gets replaced, and this can happen so way too easily on Windows. That's called a DLL. And if it gets replaced by another program that says, no, I need my special C++ DLL, I'm installing it. They're supposed to put it in their own directory, but I've seen so many programs misbehave and put it in the Windows directory. And then the Windows app gets different behavior from the library. And what you describe, right. which is that the program kind of works, but the windows are wonky, right?
Right. They freeze.
Or they freeze.
You have to open them 3 times, and then you have to and they constantly resize. So.
Yes, that's to me a direct symptom of a DLL conflict. Now, not easy to fix because Windows is going to be careful about that because it'll break the other program. Right. You have something you installed that didn't behave properly. In other words. So
I can't imagine other than Windows updates. I really don't.
You don't run any software at all, security software, any third party programs at all?
Well, thanks to you, I've got ESET for years. I love. And
yeah.
I've just got the only thing else is Office.
That shouldn't do it. Right.
Right.
And you've done the reset that doesn't delete the data, but merely replaces the Windows files, right?
Yeah, it's a real basic that you see on, you know, when you Google it or something.
Yeah, that should fix it, but because it's not, you need to go to the next step up. So if you go into the Windows recovery settings, you'll see there's an increasing level of aggressiveness.
Okay.
And just keep doing the next one up until it fixes it. Windows is supposed to do is go through there and say, hey, wait a minute, somebody stuck their DLL in my directory and replace it.
So I can actually type Windows recovery in the...
Yeah, do Windows key recovery and you'll see, or reset, and you'll see that goes right to this control panel where you do all of this stuff. And you'll see the different levels you can do in there. And you're just going to...
Recovery, yeah. Right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, I hadn't seen anything on, you know, I've Googled a million links and nobody seems to have the same exact problem under Microsoft, and I was thinking maybe somebody on the chat room might have an idea.
Well, keep an eye on the chat room as well. They're not seeing anything, but my initial reaction is that sounds like a classic DLL conflict.
Got it. All right, Leo, you're great.
Have
Appreciate
fun. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. All righty, Scotty. Back to the Scott Wilkinson program, which is already in progress. I give you a clock.
Of course, we've been talking about all kinds of stuff on the chat room. Oh, thank you for the clock. Very good. Including the demise of digital media and Graveyard Tuba, and a couple people were talking about, what about LP? Well, that's a little bit different because it's analog. And there are a lot of people, surprisingly, who prefer analog audio to digital audio. So LP is a physical medium, but it's an analog physical medium, as is reel-to-reel tape. And I don't think reel-to-reel tape is as big as LP, but there still are people who prefer analog tape, reel-to-reel tape. So that's the question between analog and digital. Blu-ray, CD, all the optical discs are all digital. And those seem to be waning in the face of streaming, which is also digital. It's more highly compressed. And my colleague at AVS Forum, Mark Henninger, maintains that streaming is becoming better and better and will soon be as good as physical media. I disagree, at least as far as the word soon is concerned. I think it'll take quite a while for streaming media, say movies, to reach the level of Ultra HD Blu-ray, 4K movies, and HDR. Because Ultra HD Blu-ray, the bit rate within the player is over 100 megabits per second, whereas streaming is typically a quarter of that. It's like 25 megabits per second. I think Netflix recommends that for 4K HDR. So you need to have that coming into your home. And they encode it with a lot more compression, a lot more data compression than Blu-rays. Blu-rays have it as well, but streaming titles are more compressed, a lot more. And so when I look at streaming titles carefully, critically, then they look more grainy. They look more noisy. They just don't look as good. Now, convenience-wise, can't beat it. And if I'm looking for something that I don't have a disc of, I'll watch it streaming, sure. And when I'm, at my normal distance from a TV, it looks pretty good. I still want my discs, though, for the best possible experience. And certainly AVS Forum members are in that camp to a large extent. But AVS Forum members are not also the wider general public. Anyway, that's what we've been talking about there. Let's see, which user 9347, which speaker system would you choose, a Perion or the one that Leo mentioned that he was buying?
Emo or the Elax or the Emotivas?
I answered this very question in an Ask the Editors this week, and the Emotivas are fantastic speakers, but they have a nominal impedance of 4 ohms.
Uh-oh, what's that mean?
It means that they present less impedance or resistance to current from the amplifier, which means they try to draw more current from the amplifier than a speaker with a 6 or an 8 ohm impedance. And that can cause problems if the amplifier isn't designed to handle that kind of load. So the guy I was answering had a Yamaha receiver, kind of a midline receiver, that specifically says you can only use 4-ohm speakers on the front, right, and left channel. You can't use them on the center or the surrounds. And he wanted 4 identical towers for the front, left, and right, and the surround, left, and right. And the Emotivas are great, but I said, and looking at the actual impedance curve that we measured for the Emotivas, they probably would work fine, no problem at all. But if you ran into any trouble and you had to report what kind of speakers you were using, they'd go, Yamaha and Emotiva would both go, oh, well, you're not supposed to use 4-ohm speakers on with that receiver, so we can't help you.
Huh.
There, Therefore,
I should check my. I mean, I should check the receiver.
Well,
I'm
no,
using.
You're getting ELAC.
Obviously,
ELAC is
no, no. But
ELAC
I'm using Emotivas, and I have for years on one of my systems. I don't notice. What would be the symptom?
The problem would mostly be excess heat.
Oh.
Because the amp is trying to work harder.
Oh.
And so it's generating more heat.
I do have some hot amps.
Well,
let me check.
That may be why. What Emotivas do you have?
Do you remember
the model?
No, I'll have to go back and look at the model and then look at the receiver and see if the receiver supports 4-amp speakers.
Four ohm speakers.
I didn't even think about that.
All I know is that
the ELACs are 8 ohms?
ELACs are 6 ohms. Six. The center channel is 8.
Are lower resisted speakers considered better for some reason? Or I know they need more power, obviously.
Well, it's not that they need more power. They draw more power.
Right. So why wouldn't people make 4-ohm speakers?
Because it's harder to make an amp that will drive it safely.
Yeah, but why would you make speakers that way?
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Thank you, Scott. I'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and the fading of the digital world as physical media sails off into the sunset in the west. And we say goodbye to Macintoshes, X marks, bookmarks, syncing. This happens all the time. Stuff disappears. You know, standalone GPS devices were supplanted by your smartphone. iPods were supplanted by iPhones. It's the way it is. And, of course, it's a little more accelerated than perhaps we're used to. Things didn't get obsolete as fast in the good old days, or did they? I don't think they did, actually. I think digital technology expands and improves at a rate we've never seen before. And there's actually, I think, good reasons for this. There's having to do with the physics of it. It's a book I've mentioned it before called Microcosm. George Gilder wrote it. It's probably 20 years old now. I'm looking at it right now on my bookshelf. And he points out that never before have we, in any invention cycle or any technology, have we seen something that gets cheaper, smaller, lower power, and smarter all at the same time. And that's something that's unique to digital technology, that as we design these chips and we get better at designing them, we're able to make them smaller, which is why everything's getting smaller. And even though they're smaller, they cost less, usually something smaller. Think about a Swiss watch. The smaller the cogs and gears and wheels are, the more difficult they are to manufacture, the more they cost. It's the opposite in digital technology. These chips get smaller, cheaper, faster. That's famous Moore's law, that every 18 months, chips will double in capacity, effectively doubling in speed, every year and a half. And so we're the beneficiaries of all that, but also as a result, we see things coming and going a lot faster and being replaced. And in software, it's even worse. Software is driven by this cycle in chips, because as chips get faster, software gets more capable. And, you know, things like better compression mean that streaming can become almost as good. Streaming video or streaming music can become almost as good as physical media. Some people might argue that, but for most people, it's good enough. And it's so much more convenient that it just supplants it. Now, there may be some controversy over my mentioning Macintosh in this, but I have to say that Apple seems to be showing time and time again that they really are favoring the portable operating system, iOS, the operating system for the iPhone and the iPad, over their desktop and laptop operating system, macOS. It's becoming increasingly obvious. Apple recently brought Matthew Panzerino in from TechCrunch, a reporter from TechCrunch, in. He had been brought in last year by Apple with a number of other reporters for their famous apology. Apple last year brought in a bunch of reporters, pretty much mostly favorable to Apple reporters, and said, "We're sorry, we blew it. our design of the Mac Pro, when did that come out? Almost 5 years ago, something like that? Yeah, I think it was 2013. The design of the Mac Pro was a dead end. Well, yeah, it was pretty, but it turns out we can't improve on it because of the thermal restrictions of that polished aluminum cylinder. That's why we haven't seen an upgrade for years on the Macintosh Pro, even though this is the most expensive and the most prized by people who need power Macintosh. It's the one video editors want, music makers want, the people who use Macintosh, you know, to make stuff. Professionals, creative professionals. Oh, and they said, so we've thrown out our trash can design. They didn't call it that. I do. Because it kind of looks like a little trash can. I had one. Yeah. We've thrown out our trash can design, they said. I had thermal problems with it the day I got it, by the way. It was already overheating. Already had problems. Had to send it back for another one. We went back to the drawing board. Now, this was last year. This was 2017. But we won't have it this year. They didn't say we'll have it next year. They said we won't have it this year. Well, now they brought in Matthew Panzerina last week of TechCrunch and tell him, we won't have it this year. But they did say, we'll probably have it next year, 2019, 6 years after the original Mac. Now, you could say, well, the Mac Pro, you could say, well, that's because Apple wants to get it right. Or, well, that's because Apple, you know, Intel doesn't improve their chips fast enough. Or what, you can make a lot of excuses, but this is one of the most valuable, actually I think it's now the most valuable company in the world, with more than almost $200 billion in cash, virtually unlimited resources, and they say, well, yeah, next year we'll have a Mac. We made the iMac Pro for you guys. Is that okay? And I think what's really going on is Apple is moving all of its designers, all of its intelligence, all of its efforts to the portable platform. And ultimately, we heard another rumor this week that Apple is going to start making its own chips for its computers, not just the iPhone and the iPad, but for its Macintoshes as well. I think this is the writing's on the wall. Apple doesn't want you to think this, because they know there'll be a storm of controversy, but the Macintosh is over. It really is. And I think that's sad. And, you know, just as much as I think the end of physical media and Oppo and Xmarks and all, this is what happens. Just not enough people need the high-powered Macs. More and more people are taking portable devices, and your phone is becoming your primary form of computing. And it's just inevitable. The handwriting's on the wall. It does beg the question, though, what are creative professionals, and even more important, programmers, the people who write the software for iOS, what are they going to use? You're going to use an iPad to write software for an iPhone? Is that how it's going to work? That doesn't sound very appealing. I think it's just the natural order of events, and I guess it'll work itself out. But what happens, and we see it, and we're seeing it now, and we'll see it again, is that the people on the fringes, the edge case people who need these technologies like Xmarks, or CDs or Blu-rays or Macintoshes, we get kind of disenfranchised. It's not an end of the world problem, but it is what happens. It will be very interesting to see what the next iPhone looks like, for instance. I think Apple's moving in that direction pretty clearly. Anthony Tortoriello, who's a photographer, Ator Aloha in our chat room, says, "Don't say that, Leo." A lot of photographers, you know, they don't want to go to Windows. But, you know, I think I kind of was forced to make this move, and I think they're going to be too. I'm sorry to say. I think it's what happens. 8888 Ask Leo. Before the break, I was talking to our caller who had DLL hell. I just wanted to kind of finish that one up. That's the problem that happens when you install software that wants its own libraries and replaces the libraries Microsoft put there in the first place. They're called Dynamic Linked Libraries, or DLLs. And they're extra software that programs use to do things like draw windows. If you're a programmer, you want to keep your program size down. You want to save yourself time. You're not going to write everything from scratch. You use libraries, existing
software libraries that do things like draw windows on the screen. And that makes it a lot easier for you. Problem is, there are Microsoft hasn't really standardized these, and so there are many different versions of some of their DLLs, and I think that that was what was happening to the caller. And unfortunately, that means you're going to have to do a system reset, a recover. He tried the kind of the minimal recover. It didn't replace the DLLs he needed. So the good news is this is something fairly easy to do now on Windows 10. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll get back to the phones right after this. Yeah, Apple has a commercial that says, "What's a computer?" I'll never forget, though, when the Mac came out in 84, Apple had a big event in San Francisco, Apple II Forever, because they knew people were freaking that the Macintosh came out and that their bread and butter, the Apple II computer, people were going, what's the future for the Apple II? So they had an event. They called it Apple II Forever. Forever. Apple II Forever. And they, you know, we're never, this is our baby. We love the Apple II. 18 months later, they killed it. That was it. A year and a half later. Forever? No, more like 18 months. That's the way it is in technology, sad to say. Apple II Forever. Or 18 months, whichever comes first. Your mileage may vary. Member FDIC. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thank you. Somebody sent me the link to the Apple II Forever theme that Apple created. What year was what was that? I want to say 1985, something like that. So forever in computer terms is not quite as long as it is in human terms. I guess that's the point. 8888, Ask Leo. Back to the phones. We go line one. Steve, Birmingham, Alabama. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. I was trying to use my Apple headphones with my PC, and I was having trouble finding the correct adapter to go from Lightning to 3.5 millimeter jack.
Oh, you have the Lightning headphones. Oh, yeah. Well, Apple makes an adapter, but it's an innie on the headphone jack. So, what you would need if you were going to use that with your PC, I don't know if this would even work, but I think it should work. So, the Apple adapter, which is like $30, takes. Oh, but that's not going to work because it's not the right. It's an Audi on the Lightning side. You need an innie on the Lightning side and an Audi on the analog side. Yeah. No. And I tell you, the reason that you're not going to see that is because the Lightning adapter is not a standard adapter. It's an Apple proprietary adapter. This is what makes Apple, Apple. The Apple and the word proprietary to go together like soup and sandwich. They just, Apple makes proprietary adapters because then you have to license them if you want to make them. And I think that there's probably nobody going to do that, make a Lightning to analog. I don't know. I think the Lightning probably doesn't have analog coming off of it. So you need, I don't know that. I'd have to look at the pinout of it. But the Lightning connector is essentially a digital connector. So is there analog audio coming out of the Lightning connector? There must be, because Apple's connector goes to analog without a lot of circuitry. So there must be some analog, left and right analog pins coming off of that Lightning port. So it wouldn't be so hard to make, but you'd get in trouble with Apple if you made it without licensing it. And the licensing fee is going to cost a lot. So basically, okay. No. Those Lightning headphones, they're for one thing only. Using with an iPhone. Then is another thing. But as long as we're saying we're elegies for dying technologies, the headphone jack. What the heck's wrong with the headphone jack? Apple did it. Now Google's doing it on their phones. Thank goodness Samsung. Samsung's kind of taken a contrarian view. Who knows? Maybe Samsung will start making a Macintosh. I don't know. Samsung on their phone, their new Samsung Galaxy S9, not only put a headphone jack,
They put a fingerprint reader and face recognition. They basically are doing everything that Apple's taking out of their phones. So Walmart sells, oh, you know what that's for? Okay, and you can actually get this. Okay, Walmart sells a female-to-male lightning adapter. And actually, you can get one with an Apple Pencil for a mere $99. Because the Apple Pencil is an outie. And it normally, you'd plug that into your iPad, which is the goofiest way to charge things I've ever seen. So they fortunately, in the Apple Pencil box, they include an adapter that lets you plug a lightning cable into it. So you can charge it that way. And Walmart apparently sells something like that. So it's a it would take your headphones, which are males, outies. I'm going to say outie and innie if you don't mind, because male-female sounds weird. So the outie on the headphone would go into the innie on the adapter, which on the other side, no, I don't think that's going to work. Oh, Dr. Mom says it's innie to innie. Okay, so an innie. So the Audi, and now you have a Lightning Innie, and then you could use, so get the Walmart adapter. I don't know if this would work. I really don't. It should. Get the Walmart adapter, which is female to female, Innie to Innie. Plug your headphones, your Apple-made Lightning headphones, which are Audis, into that. That'll give you an Innie, and then you can use the Apple $29.99 adapter, which is an Audi, into regular headphone jacks. And then you need one more wire, which is a male-to-male micro headphone adapter. Okay. Yeah. Talk about dongle hell. 8888 Ask Leah. Why don't you just get a $5 pair of headphones at the gas station? They'll be fine. Larry, Burbank, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
All right.
Hey, I got a situation. I'm at the end of my lifespan, so to speak. And I used to be pretty, I used to try to keep up pretty well with what's going on in this digital world, but.
Well, it's hard to do these days, isn't it? Yeah.
It's way beyond me anymore. My frustration is this right now, Leo. Advertisers, they aggravate me to no end.
And that's not an age thing. That's everybody.
Yeah, but it seems like 90% of the emails I get are from advertising companies, people that have bought my email address from some website or
spam.
Something. I don't know how they do that.
We call that spam, right? That's the mail you don't want. Somebody came up with a term that's a little, it doesn't violate Hormel's trademark, UCE, unsolicited commercial email. Junk mail.
Exactly. Junk mail. That's the point. On Microsoft Outlook, they have the option to move a junk mail into a junk mail folder.
Right.
And not to be able to receive it, not be able to get into my.
You don't even want to see it in the first place. You don't want to see it in your inbox. You just want. Yeah, they have that sweep function on Outlook. Outlook is not the best at getting rid of spam. I think you'll find if you use Google Mail instead. Gmail, it is better at removing spam because Google does essentially what's a collaborative spam filter. You see a button on the Google Mail. Microsoft has this too, but I don't think they do as good a job. When you get a spam, you press the spam button, and that sends a signal to Google. Google says, oh, Larry says this is spam. And then they say, oh, so does Tom and Sarah and Fritz. They all say it's spam. And when they get a few more signals, and so many people use Gmail, it doesn't take long, they go, you know, this must be spam because the humans, computers are bad at detecting spam, but the humans say it's spam. So then they put it in the spam filter. And that works remarkably well. So if you want a free solution, that's a good free solution. But there are other paid solutions, like Only My Email, that also do a very similar and very effective job. The problem with Only My Email is you have to pay for it, but you can have it collect your Outlook email for you, filter it. I think of it as sewage treatment, and then send it on to Outlook. Onlymyemail.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't think you need to pay for it, only because Gmail is free and does such a darn good job, yeah. You know. So, but if you wanted to pay for it, that's one way you could do it.
What I was wondering is if the advertisers have a way to overcome that blocking feature that Outlook has.
Well, Outlook doesn't do a good job. It's not that they're blocking it. So here's the problem. The problem is these aren't really advertisers. These are jerks who are doing everything they can to get emails through to you. And, you know, by the way, most of this email is never responded to. The thing is, it's so cheap for them to send everybody in the internet this email that even if only 1/1000th of 1% respond, it's profit. So they know most people won't see it, won't respond to it, but a few people do, and that's all they need. Some of it's also malware, that they want you to click on links, or even sometimes just viewing the email on an unpatched computer can infect your computer. So really, you don't want this stuff. And you're right. You don't even want it in your inbox. The problem is Microsoft's filtering is not very good. And these spammers are very aggressive. So they're always trying to make their spam get through the filters. They look at how the filters work, and you notice they don't spell Viagra, V-I-A-G-R-A anymore, right? They spread it out. They spell it with a one. All of this to defeat the filters. So the filters just in the long run don't work, and that's why collaborative filtration is the only solution, and that's why Gmail's solution works really well. So if you don't want to change your email address, what you could do, I actually did this for a long time, I filtered my email through Gmail. So I would have it go to Outlook, your same old address, but then have Gmail, which you can set up, and this is all free, set it up in Gmail, get the email from Outlook. And Gmail's spam filter will work on it before it gets to your inbox. Gmail also does a much better job than Outlook of filtering out malware. So that's why this is really important. Wow. I really think you do want to do this. So set up a Gmail account that only you know and make it like, don't make it Larry. Make it Larry1572 or whatever. Make it something not obvious. And then Gmail, you could say in the settings, it's they call it the POP and IMAP settings. You could say, go out and get my Outlook mail, collect it. Then from now on, instead of going to Outlook, you'll go to Gmail, but Gmail will have filtered all the spam out of the Outlook box. People will still email you at Outlook. Every once in a while, you might want to go to Outlook just to see if there's anything that you didn't get or look in the spam filter. But really, that's the best way to do it. That's how I would do it, Larry.
I see. Okay, well, that sounds good. I'll have to do that, I guess.
Bless you. It's great to talk to you. How old are you, Larry? How old are you?
Oh, I turned the big 80 a couple of months ago.
Oh, you got years to go.
Yes.
And really, one of the things that's great about technology, I think, is it's a great way to keep active, keep in touch, keep your mind going. Yeah. I plan to keep using technology until I'm 100. That's my goal.
That's good. Well, I work 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a
See?
Week.
See? You got a long way to go, dude. If you work harder than I do.
Well, I don't know about that.
Hey, it's great to meet you.
You bet. Thanks.
Thanks, Larry.
Hearing me out. You betcha.
My pleasure. You take care. Breathing the mountain air. That's Johnny Jett. Just back from a quick trip to Korea. You fooled me, Johnny. That was your April Fool's picture on Instagram with your son Jack and your wife Natalie. You looked like you were in Korea.
You know what? Sometimes you don't have to travel so far to feel like you're halfway around the world, and there's places all around, especially in California and in San Pedro. There's the Korean Bell, and it's really a great place to have a picnic. There's go to a hole in the wall. Sandwich shop called Busy Bee. Get it to go and eat up there on the hill and overlooking Catalina, and it's amazing.
You fooled me. I thought, how did he get? Well, of course, the thing is, the reason it fooled me is because you do this stuff all the time, really. You're famous for that, right?
For traveling, yeah. I mean, I used to at least 20 countries a year. I slowed down a little bit with Jack, but now we're starting to ramp up again.
If people want to be fooled by Johnny, actually, you do great Instagram stuff. Just follow him on Instagram. Johnny Jet.
I only follow him once a year. It's on April 1st.
April 1st is the one to trick you. There's the bell. I should have known better. It looks like San Pedro, but people in your Instagram feed said Korea, Phnom Penh. Web Striker got it right first. Ha ha, yeah, the San Pedro Korean Freedom Bell.
It's
so
awesome.
Johnny joins us each week to talk about travel, in particular to talk about using technology to travel like a rock star. What do you got for us today?
Well, I know we talked briefly about it last time or a couple times ago about your trip to Japan. So I'm trying to get
coming up in 12 days. I'm leaving in 12 days, John.
I'm excited for you. And I did some research. So about how you can get a free tour guide in Japan. And I did this on my first trip to Japan in 2004, but I contacted the Japanese Tourism Board to find out they still offer it, and they do. So the website is japan.travel/en for English. And then you have to scroll down to volunteer guides. And so these are all volunteers. Actually, at the top, there's a tab that says helping you plan. And then at the bottom of that page is volunteer guides.
How good are these people going to be, though, really?
Are you kidding me? They are amazing.
Oh, really? See, in America, it'd just be some guy named Joey. And say, we got the Nathan's hot dogs. We got your Gray's papaya. No, it's not like that, huh?
Not at all. My guy was insane. He actually reminded me a lot of Mr. Miyagi from Karate Kid. He knew everything. And he took me to places that I never, ever would have found or even been able to translate, man. Especially back then, because we didn't have Google Translate and apps like that.
I went to japan.travel and the English part. And then what should I click on?
It should be the volunteer guides. I actually
volunteer
just tweeted
guides.
Out.
Okay.
And that's the page you go to. So it's not a great website. It's old school. So you need to do a control F for whatever city you're going to.
Oh, yeah, because I'm going to Osaka. Right. Yeah.
And that's actually where I did it in 2004. So
is Mr. Miyagi still in business? I would like to go with him.
Well, it's absolutely free. All you have to do is pay for their transportation when they're with you. And also if you and any meals that.
Because we have a free day. Actually, we have two free days because of the jet lag. We decided to come out a day early. So we're going to arrive, I guess, on Friday night. And then Saturday, I didn't plan anything.
Well, they're usually retirees and students. But the problem is I'm a little bit late for your trip because some of them say you need at least 2 weeks or 3 weeks advance notice. But you can always email them. And on this page, there's multiple contacts for each city. So just because there might not be one for Tokyo, you have to read the different.
They
tell you the different languages available. They'll tell you what the guides are, their emails, and just contact them and see. But
see, I feel nervous because Japan, like the language. I could do France. I can get by. Germany, I could get by. England, it's tough, but I can get by. But then I go to Japan. I don't understand anything. The street signs, anything.
It's gotten a lot better.
I can't even use the toilets.
Are you kidding me? Those are the best toilets in the world.
I know, but there are no English instructions.
You just got to press a button and sit there.
See
and
what happens.
Yeah. The warm seats. I mean, listen, if I could afford a $5,000 toilet, I would have one in my house. They're the best. The total toilet.
All right. So japan.travel/en.
And I'll put it in the show notes right now, and I just tweeted it and I tagged you.
Okay.
So there it is.
Okay.
So that way it's a lot easier to find because it's not an easy. Actually, it goes to my website.
That's
and
the
then
way to do it. Like, just go to johnnyjet.com. He'll lead you. He'll lead you in the right direction. Thank
all
you.
All right.
All right. How about an app? You got an app for me?
I sure do. So I assume you heard on the news that we had an earthquake down here in Southern California this week.
I did. I heard it. Well, I didn't hear it in the news. I heard it on Twitter.
Okay,
that's where you find out everything on Twitter.
Yeah, I was having a work lunch and I was in a restaurant, and all of a sudden everyone just looked up, and I looked outside and the cars were shaking, the parked cars. I always look at the water on the table. So if it's shaking or the chandeliers, you know there's an earthquake.
Yeah. 5.3, something like that?
It was a 5.3. So everyone's like, was that an earthquake? And we're like, yeah, of course it's an earthquake. So I thought I had an app, but I did not. So I did a search and I found one called Quake Feed. And the website's quakefeed.net, but it's an iTunes only app, iOS only. And it gave me the information right away. It told me exactly where it was, what the magnitude was, and I told the people next to us. And then 4 minutes later on the news, it popped up and it said the same exact thing that I was saying. And the people looked at me like, who are you? And
how I'm did
like,
you, hey. You must be a seismologist.
And I'm like, I know nothing about geology. I do know how to find some apps, good apps. Nice. And this one's highly rated. It had over 10,000, almost 10,000 reviews, and it was a 4.7 out of 5 rating. And what I like about it, especially when you're traveling and you're going to Japan, which is, you know, notorious
earthquake
for
country. Yeah.
And it's always made me uneasy. And I've been in Japan actually one time. I was on the 29th floor and we had a 5-point something earthquake and I flipped. I thought it was the end of the world. It was only a 5-point something. I ran down the stairs because you're not supposed to take the elevator. And I started like went to go buy stuff and people were just like, what are you doing? It was just normal. There's like no, just relax.
But anyway, but when people are from out of town. They don't know.
Yeah, and I did not know. And that was one of my first trips there. But what I like about it is it will give you an alert, especially if it's a 6.0 or over. So if let's say you're in Tahiti in an overwater bungalow and there's a big earthquake, you want to know if there was an earthquake nearby or somewhere in the world so you can get the heck out of Dodge.
There is also a new app which actually I know about because we're going to be interviewing the creators on our new screensaver show later in the day called Quake Alert.
Okay, let me get that one.
So they work with the U.S. Geological Survey and Caltech. Now, I think it's in beta. We read about it in Slash Gear, and I think it's about to come out. But it gave an early warning to the folks.
What?
Yes. It gave an early warning. It's from Early Warning Labs. Now, I thought you couldn't predict earthquakes, and I don't think this is exactly prediction. I think that they get early tremors and they know that something's coming. The P wave, they're monitoring the P wave, which is a harmless and speedy precursor to the S wave, which is the one that you feel, the shaker. And you might get 20 seconds. You wouldn't get a huge warning ahead of time. But think about how great that would be for a bet if you could say you're at lunch and say, who wants to take a bet? I feel like an earthquake's coming on. It's earthquake weather. I'll bet you $10 you could win that bet.
You better speak fast like that FedEx guy used to. Get that out.
If you're on Twitter, at Early Warning Lab. Anyway, this is a new one, but we're going to be interviewing them. But yeah, I think this kind of stuff is interesting, isn't it?
For sure. And especially when you're traveling, this is good stuff to know. And
I need this.
You know,
yeah, because they got tsunamis there too. That makes me nervous.
Well, that's like that was like one in 100 years.
Once in 100 years, never gonna happen again.
Well, you never know. Times are changing.
Johnny Jett, he's the guy. Go to johnnyjett.com. That's his website. He's got a free travel newsletters, bunch of them. He's got all sorts of information. Follow him on Twitter at Johnny Jett and on Instagram too. And right here each week. Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Norm on the line from Fort Pierce, Florida. Hello, Norm.
Hey, Leo, a longtime listener, first time caller.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Go back to ZDTV, I think it was, right?
Yeah. Every time somebody mentions this, I'm compelled. I feel compelled to mention that in 1 month, May 11th, brace yourself, will be the 20th anniversary of the launch of ZDTV.
Wow.
20 years ago, 1998.
Wow.
Wow. I was doing radio. I was doing this before that. I started doing this in the early 90s. God. But in 98, I went full-time for 6 years, did a show called The Screensavers and Call for Help. And it was basically this show on TV, right?
Yeah.
And we'd answer calls from people and talk about technology. And I think I created a lot of nerds in that six-year time frame. I meet geeks all the time who say, I grew up, I'm in programming, I'm in software, I'm in IT because of you. So we
can... Yeah, I'm in voice over IP, so...
See what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what can I do for you, sir?
Well, I've got, I think, the same TV that you have, the LG OLED 65. I got C.
Yeah, you're one better than me. I got a B6, which is the 2016...
You got the flat one. I got the curved one.
Yeah. How do you like it?
I love it. I mean, it's got the, as you know, HDR. It's got Dolby Vision.
I know.
And I just got a Comcast 4K DVR.
Oh, you got the new X1.
Yeah, I guess it's smaller. It's 4K. It's Comcast.
Nice. Nice.
And what you can do on demand, pull up the Olympics, because that's still on.
Yes. That was the only way you could really watch 4K HDR Olympics coverage was to have that box, or I think Dish, some of the other carriers were doing it as well, but you had to have a special box, and I didn't, and I felt bad because I could see the 4K, I guess, but I couldn't see the HDR. So did it look great?
When you pull it up, all of a sudden the HDR comes up.
You see that little thing? That I'm always looking for that. Up in the upper right-hand corner, it says HDR, and you go,
bingo, you know. And you could do that. If you have Comcast, you have that the DVR?
No, I don't have the new X1 box, no.
Well, I got it swapped out for free. But anyway, I have a question about my TV, one of the drawbacks.
By the way, they may have said it's free. Nothing's free from Comcast. they shouldn't use that word. At no charge, they swapped you up, but I bet you pay a higher rental fee or something. I'm sure they're getting you somewhere.
No, actually. I'm just checking on it. I have a regular 1080 DVR that they mailed me the new one. I put it back in the box and, you know, shipped it off, and they paid for the shipping, of course.
Well, sounds like it was for free, minus the $200 a month you pay for your cable. But other than that, it's free.
That's true.
Yeah. No, I don't mind me. I'm just bitter.
No. I don't blame you. They are like that, So what you do is like fighting City Hall,
Well, and you're getting ready because what's next? The World Cup? Something else is going to be in 4K HDR soon.
Oh, is it? I'm going to be looking forward to that. That'll be live then.
Yeah, that one should be live. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I've got a burn-in problem.
Oh no.
Yeah. With that TV. I mean, I've been watching a lot over the past year, like CNN and stuff like that.
And so the little CNN bug, they call that, is that burned in? Do you see that?
Yeah, and I see breaking news. You know, every story is breaking news.
I know. What is the deal with that?
Well, it's caused
they completely
damage.
Devalued the term breaking news.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything is breaking news.
Yeah, it's all breaking news. Well, it's not breaking news then. It's just news.
It's snowing in New York, so that's breaking news.
Breaking news! It's snowing!
Winter time,
Yeah, it's winter. It's snowing! Ay, ay, ay. All right. So there's different kinds of burn-in with OLEDs. OLEDs don't have the same problems. Plasma's really had a burn-in problem.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And those were permanent. There is image retention, which usually goes away.
I hope so. I don't know. I mean,
Then there's burn-in, which usually will go away, but will take longer to go away.
Oh, yeah.
Most of these TVs, including that LG, do things to prevent that. They move imperceptibly. They move the screen one pixel up, down, left, right.
I turned it on.
Yeah, make sure you have that turned on.
Yeah, it is.
According to most experts, no OLED burn-in should be permanent. You may see it, but it shouldn't stay there forever. But it is not unusual to have some image retention.
I'm hoping over time it'll go away.
Yeah. So turning it off, where you really get a problem is video games, because people often will pause a video game. Teenagers will often pause people. What? Wait, when did we start calling them people? Teenagers will start playing a video game, pause it, and leave it overnight. And then you're going to hear dad get upset. Now, the truth is, though, that the jitter that most of these screens do should protect you.
They have screen savers, too. That kicks in, too, after a while.
Yes, that's right. But if you turn it off for a long weekend, in theory, it will be gone. So in other words, it's supposed to recover. So if you see anything, especially if it's bright on the screen and you leave it there for some hours, it's going to hold that for a little while, but turn the TV off and then leave it. Maybe just leave it over. Well, I presume you turn it off at night. You don't leave it on CNN overnight.
Right. No.
And you still see it when you wake up.
Yeah. And it's only when I see like a red color.
That's right. That's the brighter colors. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'll see how it goes. You know, I'll give you a report maybe weeks later. You know, I think you're going on vacation, huh?
Yeah, I am in a couple of weeks. But it should, in theory, that, by the way, vacation is a good time. I mean, who doesn't turn off their TV? But it's a good time to test this because it'll be off for a few days or maybe even a week or two. In theory, OLED is not supposed to have permanent burn-in, unlike the old days with plasma, where it really was.
It did, yeah.
Yeah. And CRTs had this problem, too, because the phosphors would get damaged.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I like where you see at any angle. It's the same intensity. You could be at a completely off angle, and it's the same intensity with OLED.
Yeah. I love it. I'm a huge fan. So LG, I'm looking at the burn-in page on LG. They do talk about burn-in and all the things they do to prevent it. Their theory is it can't happen. Turn it off. It's probably a good idea not to leave it on all day, all the time. That bright red CNN breaking news thing, that makes sense that that's going to burn in. They don't move it around. Turn it off when you're not watching it. You got to be maybe a little bit more careful with your OLED than you would be, say, with an LCD, which LCDs really don't have any burn-in.
Oh, not at all. You can leave it on all day.
Yeah. So think of your LG as something a little bit more special that needs a little bit more coddling.
And I've got the 3D, too. You don't have the 3D, which I really...
I have the 3D, but those glasses have a lot of dust on them.
Oh, yeah. You don't use them, man.
Lot of dust on those old glasses. No, I hate 3D. Do you ever watch it?
Yeah, it's the passive glasses. It's not the active glasses.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That may be on another TV that I have the glasses. You're right. I don't think the B6 has
3D. Right, right. And the passive lobby, that's what they have in the movie theaters.
Yeah, that's better. The Real D passive stuff. Right. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
I like that better. The ones I have on my Samsung, I have to charge them, which is silly.
Yeah, right. No, these you don't. You can take them from the movie theater, and it's the same glasses. No battery.
Oh, there's a tip. Just steal the movie theater glasses.
There you go. Well, they're only like $12, I think.
That's good. Hey, nice to talk to you. I appreciate it, Norm. Have a great day. And, just turn it off once in a while just to let it recover. In theory, there's no long-term damage. Synapse had a tip also. Put a white screen up for a while. That's actually probably a pretty good tip. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You know, Quicken Loans is the number one lender in the country, number one in size, but also number one in your hearts. J.D. Power customer satisfaction, number one every year for the last 8 years running. Number one. And that's because people love working with Quicken Loans. You're going to love them even more now with this new product, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is an entirely online process. You can do it on your phone. You can do it on your laptop, on your tablet. You go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And it's faster because computers, right? But it's also simpler because you don't have to get any paperwork. You don't have to fill out a long application. You answer some basic questions because Rocket Mortgage has trusted partners with all the financial institutions. You share your financial information with them just by touching a button. So you don't have to go to the attic. You don't have to do anything. They get everything they need. And the truth is also, they don't need as much. They make it a lot simpler to crunch the numbers based on income, assets, and credit. And they come back with loans you qualify for. You choose the term, the down payment. You choose the rate. They say, good, you're approved. And it's that simple. It's beginning to end about 10 minutes or less. You could actually even shorten that if you go right now to rocketmortgage.com/techguy and get started, create the account. Then it'll just be a few minutes. You're at an open house. You say, let's buy this. And you can get the mortgage approval that fast. You can also do refis through them. And I know a lot of people now, this is the time. The interest rates are definitely going up. They say, I want to lock in a lower interest rate. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. RocketMortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage for their support. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You could still call. Just use Skype. Won't cost you anything. 888-827-5536. Website, techguylabs.com. And well, there's only an hour left in the show. I'm going to keep taking calls because I have to pre-record ahead for our... I like to give you fresh shows when I'm on vacation. There will be no reruns while I am gone. We will be recording all new material. So I'll be recording more calls. I've been doing that for the last few weeks after the show. If you have a hard time getting in, I know it's difficult. That would be a good time to do it. Right after the show ends in about 50 minutes. 8888, ask Leo. Meanwhile, Amy is on the line from Schertz, Texas. Hello, Amy.
Oh, hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for holding on. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I've been listening for several years, but this is my first time calling.
Yay. Welcome.
Well, thank you. My question is, I have a 27-inch mid-2010 iMac that I passed on to my 14-year-old son. And, of course, he likes the fact that he doesn't experience as many freezes or issues.
It's a nice computer.
Windows
yeah,
PC.
That's a nice computer.
Is, yeah.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, after all these years, it's still running pretty good. And it was running even better when I upgraded the RAM to 12 gigabytes.
Yes, it should. That's a nice improvement. Yeah.
Now, the only downside is after all these years, it has a 1 terabyte SATA hard drive, which is, from the wear and tear, everything's starting to slow down.
Yes, this would be a good upgrade. Not an easy one. But a good upgrade for that Mac is to put a solid-state drive in there. And I can tell that's where you're going because you said SATA drive. And I'm pretty sure you can do it with a 2010 iMac, but I know you can, in fact, because I've done it. But it's not fun because you need a suction cup, a giant suction cup to take the screen off. Here's where I'd send you if you have any doubt about whether you could do this or not. Otherworld Computing, I always tell people about this. They're not an advertiser. This is where I go to get Mac stuff. MacSales.com. And they sell very nice. I've used their Mercury solid-state drives. They're very good. I just upgraded a 2015 MacBook Pro with a solid-state drive because I don't like the current MacBooks. So, and it really is an easy upgrade on a laptop. It's a little harder on an iMac. But what you could do is go there. You could price it out because they're not cheap, and they have videos there. They'll tell you exactly what you need for that particular model, and you want to get it exactly right, you know, that model, and then watch the video and see how comfortable you are with it. It'd be a great thing for a teenager to do. Teach him some skills here. It's not like you need you don't need a hot glue, melter or anything like that. It's all screws. The only really tricky part is this screen, and there's no good way to hold it. So they actually send you with the hard drive a suction cup that you can use to just like window washers. You know, go right on the screen.
Yeah.
You tighten it down, and then it's got a handle on it, and you kind of take the screen off, you put it on a nice soft cloth, and then you can get in there. And that's the only extra difficult thing to do. The rest of it's pretty straightforward. If you feel at all nervous, you can absolutely take it to an Apple store, and they will do it as well.
Oh, will they? Okay, even though it's Apple's website says it's legacy now. So
it's legacy, but if you're going to pay them, they'll do They'll do anything.
Okay.
Yeah. And if not, there's going to be some shade tree mechanic in town. Where's Schertz? Is it near a big city?
It's right next to San Antonio.
Okay. There'll be somebody in San Antonio that can do that for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is. There's also a local. Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too afraid of at least watch the video. Let me just look. You said the 2010...
Mid-2010.
All right. That'd be July, and it's a 27. So I'm looking at the July 2010 iMac 27-inch on the Otherworld Computing site. And they have an SSD bay add-in kit, and they go, for a terabyte, it's still pretty pricey. They've gotten less expensive. The kit includes all the tools, including the suction cups. That's $389, but you could put a – you know what? On that Mac, what I would probably do is put a 240 or 120 gig is $119 kit. I put that in and then get him an external drive. Because all you really want, yeah, all you really care about is the operating system and application. So have that on the internal drive. That'll speed up things immensely. And then that way, an external drive's not expensive. That Mac has USB. I don't know if it has USB 3, but you know, you can get an external drive. In fact, you know what you could do when you remove the old drive, get a case for it. And put it in an external case, and you'll have the old drive, a terabyte drive externally, and then it should be very easy. They do sell this. Maybe get the 240 for $154. That's not too bad. They have videos you can watch. They have, you know, this is their do-it-yourself bundle. I think you can do it. See, it comes with actually two little suction cups.
Okay.
How old's your teenager?
14.
Perfect. Do it with him. Do it with him.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. Son, you want a new hard drive? We're going to learn how.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can watch the videos and see. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a piece of equipment from DirecTV. They call it DECAW. I don't know if you've heard of it. DECAW?
No, I don't know that. What is that?
Okay. What it is it allows me to be able to use the whole home DVR and to be able to access on-demand content.
Nice.
From DirecTV. Now, the only issue that I have with it, or the concern, is that by default, it has Telnet enabled, and you can't.
Oh, you don't want that.
No, what? Not really.
What? Oh, you're smart. You're smart. You know something here. Now, this is you're absolutely right. That's terrible.
Yeah, and there's no way. I mean, I was.
You can't disable Telnet. Oh, my good. Okay, so here's how you fix that. That's not good. So Telnet is an old technology that allows you to log in from the internet into a computer. And even if it has a Telnet password, Telnet itself is not very secure. Most people, if they're going to do this, will use a more modern technology called SSH, Secure Shell, because Telnet doesn't encrypt the data. So everything, including the password, is visible to anybody who's watching your internet. You don't want Telnet enabled on any device. But you don't have to disable it on the device. You have a router, I'm sure. It's connected to the internet through a router, right?
Yeah, I've got it disabled on the
That's
router.
That's all you need to worry about. That means nobody from the outside world can Telnet in, only you inside your network.
So, okay, because I've gone as far as disabling the Wi-Fi. Of course, I changed the default password, and I disabled the Wi-Fi. I've got it connected via the LAN cord.
This is a lesson, though, for everybody who's got DirecTV gear. You have Telnet enabled on it with a default password that I guarantee you everybody knows. Oh, my God. That's just such a nightmare. At least you can change it. You did the right thing. You changed it. And now by blocking port, 22, by blocking the Telnet port, or really on a router, just not opening the Telnet port, that means nobody from outside your house can get in. And that's sufficient. Yeah. Someday Junior will figure out how to Telnet into your DirecTV box, and that'll be a good thing. You could be proud of that.
Yeah.
Junior, you figured it out. Nice job. We're training Junior to be a hacker here. He's going to upgrade the iMac. By the way, Otherworld Computing does say that's an advanced upgrade. Something.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Yeah. But you're advanced. You're obviously advanced. You know enough to say, I got a Telnet port. You're advanced.
Well, I'll give it a shot.
You can do it. I have confidence. Look at the video. Take a look and see. It's not actually that hard. It's just a little scary.
Okay.
Because you got to pull that that screen off. But they give you the suction cups and the screwdrivers and everything. I'm a big fan of do-it-yourself, and a 14-year-old should. You know what? A 14-year-old should know how to take apart a 2010 iMac. I believe.
I agree.
Yeah. Hey, nice to talk to you. Have a great one,
nice
Amy.
To talk to
All
you
right,
too.
Take care.
All right, you too.
Our show today. You ought to be able to. My son, 15-year-old, has a friend whose mom says you can't have a car until you can take apart the engine, strip it, and put it back together again. And I thought, well, that's a skill he probably isn't going to have to use too much. But on the other hand, taking apart a computer and putting it in a hard drive, maybe that is something you'll use. Have some more of your calls in just a little bit. 8888 Ask Leo. Gizwiz coming up too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Sam is on the line from South Williamsport, PA. What are you laughing at, Sam?
Actually, that was my wife.
Oh, what is she? Is she laughing at me?
No, she's laughing at me.
Oh, good. That's kind of the story of a marriage right there in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, it is.
Yeah. She's still giggling. What's your wife's name?
Dawn.
Dawn, stop giggling at Sam. What can I do for you, Sam?
All right.
Sam, put your pants back on. I know what she's laughing at now. What can I do for you?
Well, we were printing out our daughter's graduation announcements, and in the middle of doing it, my cat walked across the laptop.
Oh, no. No, it didn't go. Now I know why she's laughing.
Yes.
Does the graduation announcement say...
No, actually, they were all there. We've got three people coming to graduation when we're expecting like 30.
Oh, no.
Because we need to print the rest of these out. But at this point, the screen just blanked on the laptop.
Oh.
We shut it off, turned it back on. It starts up.
I don't think the cat did that. Well, maybe the cat did do that. That's not good.
No.
So this literally happened the minute your cat walked across the keys?
Dawn? Yes, it did.
Don't laugh at this, Dawn. This is serious. No, actually, it's easy to fix. I know exactly what happened. And I don't blame you for freaking out, but it turns out on many keyboards, and I bet there's one on yours, there's a button that turns off the screen. So what you want to do is look up at the top at the function row and see if you can find a function key that either turns the screen. There's brightness ones, but there's also one on mine anyway that, and on many laptops, that will actually black out the screen. In some cases, what it's doing is it's looking for an external screen. In some cases, I guess it's just to save power. But there's no way a cat walking across a keyboard broke your computer. It's much more likely Kitty just hit the wrong key at the right time.
Exactly. Well, which one of the like icon should I be looking
what
for?
What kind of computer is it?
It's a Dell. Dell laptop.
Yeah, I don't have a Dell right in front of me. I'm just looking at my Lenovo. You're going to look at. It's going to be on the function row. And there's a number of, most of them will have icons. There'll be one that has what looks like a screen icon. On my Lenovo, it's got the laptop plus a second screen, and that's okay. That button. So if you hit it, what it'll do is if it's that kind of a button, it'll say, oh, turn off the internal display it externally. But she may also have hit the brightness keys. So play, you know, it's just going to be a matter of playing with those keys. It's highly unlikely, although it's possible. It's highly unlikely that she somehow broke the computer just by mashing those keys. I mean, maybe there was a lot of static built. Do you have a lot of static electricity where you are?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
Yeah.
No,
it's pretty humid this time of year in Williamsport, I'm sure. So I doubt that's it. So look, impress some of those function keys. Almost certainly that's what happened. It may be in the function keys, and if your Dell has a numeric keypad, it could also be attached to that.
Okay.
Look in your Dell manual. There will be a description manual, as if there is a manual.
Okay.
But there's somewhere all right. In the Dell brochure, almost certainly that's what happened. You'd have to imagine something pretty catastrophic for the cat to just stroll across the keys and break the computer, like a big static shock, that kind of thing. I made that too in our chat room. Asks, did the cat learn to fly after that? Now. Maybe that's why Dawn was giggling. It's catastrophic. I'm almost certain that the cat hit a key that disabled the screen. Almost certain. All right, here we go. Marsworm has found an article online on how to turn the Dell laptop display off and on. There's a button on the left side top to on off the screen. Okay. And there's also a quick set application that comes with the Dell that allows you to program those buttons. You might... If this happens a lot, disable that monitor on-off button. that might help. Anyway, good luck. I think it's, you might have to hold the function key while you press that. Again, this depends very much on how your laptop is set up. On most of my laptops, my default use of the function keys is the function, not the special function, like turning the volume up or the brightness down. I prefer to have those available, but you'll see in their settings that you can also say, no, function keys should do F1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, not those special media functions or screen functions. And that's another trick that would help with Kitty in future, is to maybe go to the settings, keyboard settings, and say, the function keys by default are F1 through 12. And then if I hold the function button down, then they're the special functions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Function D can also turn off the internal screen, somebody's saying. So that's a specific Dell keystroke. Smart kitty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, and again, I'll be continuing calls for another hour or so. So keep the phones going, even after the radio show ends. Next in Santa Maria, California, Ed is on the line. Hi, Ed.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Wonderful, sir. Really need your assistance. I've got a problem with some software, Microsoft Streets and Trips, and it's 2013.
Wow. I thought they stopped making it. Well, I guess that was probably the last year.
They really did. And that's the problem. I've been using it for years, and now they quit making it. Yeah. I recently had a problem with my computer. I had to do a reinstall, and of course, when I did the reinstall, the software was gone. So I had the disk, I had it all reinstalled it. But when it comes to the final, where you put the serial numbers and all in, it won't let you do it.
Yeah, what happens, sad to say, is when Microsoft stops making a product, or any company stops making a product, for a period of time, they keep it around. But at some point, what they do is they disable the authentication server. That's the thing that it logs into to verify the serial number. And then the authentication server pings it back saying, yep, that's real, he's genuine, activate it. So my guess, I don't know for a fact, they discontinued that a couple of years ago. My guess is they kept the authentication server running for a few years, but by now have turned it off.
That makes perfect sense. I went to the Microsoft store. I called India.
What, didn't they know? Didn't they tell you?
No one would tell me about the authentication service. You're the first one that even brought that up.
Yeah.
It sounds perfectly logical.
Yeah, I'm almost certain that's what it is. Not all software does that. You know, sometimes they have built into the software algorithm to authenticate. But most often in the last few years, certainly, with ubiquitous internet access, they just, and Microsoft does this with everything, they just have an authentication server that says, yeah, he owns
it. Is there any workaround?
Probably,
on that?
Almost certainly. You'd have to go into the dark side, the dark neighborhoods on the net. But if you Google authenticate Microsoft Streets and Trips key or something like that, there will be ways to do it, I would imagine. Almost always there is. And frankly, I don't see any reason not to do that. You bought it. You own it.
Yes.
It's Microsoft that pulled the plug on it prematurely. Yeah.
Right.
Really what Microsoft should do, if you ask me, is keep that authentication server running forever. It doesn't cost them much to do that. But their attitude probably is, well, we're not going to keep it up to date. And as a result, it could be a security issue if people keep using it and a flaw is found.
Right.
So that's the same reason they don't authenticate Windows 7 anymore, Windows XP. They turn those authentication servers off because they don't want people to use them anymore.
Okay. Now, another question then. I've been using this, to lay out trips when we're on, we do a lot of traveling. We're on the road, lay out trips ahead of time. We don't use a smartphone. We're still old school. So this is really handy for us to be able to pull this up and figure out trips and figure out distance.
I'll tell you why Microsoft discontinued that. All of that capability is available through Microsoft's own Maps website, Maps, probably maps.bing.com, but Microsoft, Google Microsoft Maps. Google has actually probably even a better system at maps.google.com, and you can do exactly what you're used to doing, which is you can plan a trip, make a map with lines on it. You know, like, remember AAA probably still does this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so it's the same idea, only in software. And you don't, obviously, if you don't have a smartphone, it's a little, you know, less useful. But you can do it on your computer. If you have a computer, you can do it on your computer. Obviously, you do.
I can do it on my laptop. What was the recommendation? Because I've tried Google Maps, but it just brings you up. You know, you want to go from point A to point B. And I want to do a whole list.
You can add, if you look, it's maybe not obvious, but you can add intermediate points all along the way.
Okay.
So you just look in the directions there. Bing Maps is bing.com/maps. That might be more comfortable for you because it's basically the online version of what you had, Streets and Trips.
Yes.
You can add, I'm looking at Bing Maps, there's a little plus sign underneath. So it starts off, as most maps do, with from and to, assuming you just want to go from point A to point B. But there's a plus sign that allows you to add point C, D, E, F, and G. And you just keep extending that, and you can make yourself a triptych just like AAA used to do.
Excellent.
And you can even print it out, so you don't have to have a computer with you on the road. You can print it out, the maps and so forth. So just, yeah, it's kind of, I don't blame you. It's not obvious where they put that stuff. But on BIM maps, it's pretty straightforward. They just have a little plus sign under A, B that adds C. I just added C, D, E, F, G, H, and I.
Excellent. All right, sir. Thank you.
Thanks
saved
for calling.
Me a lot of hassle.
My pleasure.
And, we're still going to get a smartphone one of these days.
One of these days.
Just haven't figured out which day is.
Well, you know, this is obsolete day because we started talking about how stuff kind of in the digital world kind of disappears. And that's a perfect example. This was a very popular software program for Microsoft, and they discontinued it because nobody's going to buy it if you can do it online. Doug, what do you, Doug and his wife are visiting the studio. They drive all over the country in their RV. Do you use software to plan your trips out, or?
RV Trip Wizard,
and that's downloadable software?
It's not software. It's
a website. Of course it is. So there's another one to look at that's specifically designed for road trippers. That might be a little bit more to your liking. One of the things that was great about Streets and Trips is it had points of interest and all that. A lot of these online maps do that as well now, but it sounds like RV Trip Wizard, given that it was going to be for RVs, it'll have campground information, the kind of stuff that you might want to. Hotels, motels,
gas
great.
Stations,
gas stations. Can't forget that. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate it. RVTripWizard.com. There's another recommendation. 8888-ASK, Leo, the phone number. Let's see. I think I can get another call in before our weekly visit from Dick D. Bartolo, our giz whiz. George is in Santa Monica. Hi, George.
Hi, Leo. I want to let you know, I work with Dickie D on your After Screensavers.
Oh, nice.
Gizfiz show comes on.
Yeah.
What I do.
Are you the guy who does those pictures, the caption contest?
Yeah, yeah.
I love those, George. You're great.
Oh, yeah. I'm having trouble. Sometimes I'll go to a site, I look at a picture, I say, I want this. But down below on the bottom left, it says, this photo may be subject to copyright.
Yes.
And I can't find anywhere to call or talk to somebody about using that. I don't know.
Here's what I'm going to suggest. This actually became a big issue when one of the big, I think, was it Corbis? One of the big, oh, no, it was Getty Images. One of the big stock photo sites sued Google saying, you know, Google has an image search, and it had on the image search a button that said download this image or view image for download. And Getty sued them saying, you're putting us out of business because people aren't buying clip art anymore. They're just going to Google image search and stealing it. So Google's response to this, the response is sealed, and I imagine they gave them some money. But one of the things they did, they took the view image button, as you've probably noticed, George, off of Google image search. But that doesn't stop somebody from right-clicking and downloading. You can still right-click any image and download it. Here's my suggestion, though. You want to be on the up and up, especially since you're going to air those images on my podcast network.
Yes.
So restrict your search to Creative Commons images. So professional photographers nowadays often will post their images, copyrighted images, and expect people to pay for them if they use them. But many of us, and I include myself in this, will post our images with something called a Creative Commons license that specifies precisely what credit we want, what limitations there are. You can do this at Flickr, flickr.com. Search for Creative Commons licensed photos. You can do it in a Google search. Then those photos will not only generally be usable, they'll have specific information about what the restrictions are. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you for doing that, George. I love that captions contest. That's awesome. Hey, real briefly, before we get into the GizFizz, I do want to mention our fine sponsor for this program, 23andMe. You know I'm a 23andMe guy. You spit in a little vial. There's enough DNA in there for them to do a DNA report on you. They have health and wellness, and they have ancestry. And it's so cool. Send in the vial. I did this years ago. And within a few weeks, you're going to get 75-plus online reports, everything from how much Neanderthal is in you to where your people came from to whether you're likely to have back hair and on and on and on. It's so much fun, and it's easy to do, and I really love it. In fact, I like it so much, I mentioned this before to my sister, my mom. My sister got it for my dad. Lisa's done it. But it's a great thing to get your kids into genetics with, because you get these full genetic reports, and you can see the haplogroup, the maternal haplogroup, the paternal haplogroup, all this DNA stuff that's really fascinating. And everybody loves reading about themselves, right? So it's a great way to introduce them to genetics and how it works, because it's their DNA. You can also, these ancestry reports, they've got a whole new ancestry tool with the ethnicity wheel and the ancestry composition, and you can use the DNA relative finder to find and connect with relatives. It is really great, and I want you to try it out. Go to 23andme.com/twit, 23andme.com/twit, and really, it's a great one to give family members. I gave it for Christmas, and they appreciate it. My sister Eva called me up when she got her report. She said, Leo, and we've been sharing it back and forth. But it is really great fun. 23andme.com/twit. You know, thank goodness for Dick DiBartolo, because if he didn't appear on this show, I don't think you'd hear these disco hits ever again. Boogie Wonderland. Okay, Dick, here's your test. The name of the group.
I have this.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, I can't remember the chat room. I have the CD. I probably have the LP.
All right, we can.
And I probably have the extended version.
The 4 hour and 33 minute late night version. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
You know, disco songs, one song probably is enough, frankly. Michael Cozio, who sang Boogie Wonderland? Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Fire,
of course. Dick DiBartolo, he's a disco fanatic, and we play the song for him. It wakes him up, really, for the segment.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't wait to hear anything when I go, oh, my God. And less than a week, Dennis was playing disco loud, and I started reviewing a gadget.
I used to have comics on the show back in the old days, and I used to have Bob Sarlat on, and I would play the Letterman theme for him when he came on. He said, "Don't do that. I get sweaty every time I hear that song."
Oh, that's very funny. That's very funny.
So Dick DiBartolo is Mad's maddest writer. For many years, you've read him. I have in Mad Magazine, and we're going to still read him forever because he's just going to keep doing this forever. But he also... he takes all the money he makes from Mad Magazine and sinks it into gizmos. That's why we call him our gizmo wizard or gizwiz. Hi, Dick.
Exactly. And yes. I look for the weird stuff. Next week, I have kind of a serious gadget. But this week, I have a bizarre gadget. One, it's another travel gadget.
Okay.
And one that I might actually use. Like last week, we had the seat sitters. I don't think I would use
those. I didn't order those, although Lisa wanted one that said king and queen on them.
Yeah.
But I thought, I don't really want the other people in the airplane to get mad at us.
No. So this is a way to stop the fighting over the armrest in coach.
Oh, man. We need this.
Okay.
No, by the way, nobody understands the rules. If you're in the middle, both armrests are yours. Right?
That's official?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the first person that got to sit down. Claimed them.
Hence this gadget.
Hence this gadget. Okay, so you know about origami.
Yes. Okay. That's the folding technology.
Exactly. Yes. Right. Exactly. So this is called sorigami, like S-O-A-R. Okay. So they recommend you ask your seatmate before you do it. But I think your seatmate would say absolutely. So you unfold the wings, and then there are two plastic other wings that open up.
It's a seat and it divider. Slides.
Oh, exactly. Oh. And there's a little divider that stands up in the middle about an inch and a half high. So now you each have your own little armrest section, and you have something between you so your arms don't touch. And it has adjustable screws for different widths.
Wait a minute, you screw it in?
No, no, no. The flaps slide over. See here?
I like it. Website. She waves the guy off. Video. She says, get off my armrest.
Yes, get your elbow out of there. Yeah. No, I would just say, I did it with the spare tray on an airplane. On the way to Vegas, my seatmate didn't look friendly. On the way back, he looked friendly. I just said, hey, I test gadgets. Can we try this tray in your window?
And he said, appreciated it.
Yes. And so with this, I think if you opened it up and said, can we put this here and we'll each have our own armrest, I think people would say yes.
Wow. So how much is the...
It's $29.50.
$29.50.
All right. The little things that your elbows go on is a leatherette that is Velcroed on so that when you get home, you can clean the side of your seatmate.
The other guy's
don't know.
Side.
The other guy.
Yeah, I don't know. He had some strange elbow grease there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Yeah. Wow. So it's a clever idea.
Where do you find this stuff?
I read every article. I troll the back pages of Amazon, you know.
The name sorigami says it all. Yeah. Yes. It's on Amazon, $29.50 sorigami, but you can read all about it.
Oh, it looks like it dropped in price.
Oh, what is it? $24.99.
It's $24.99.
They saw you coming. All right. All right. High quality leatherette parts. That explains it all. If you go to gizwiz.biz, that's Dickie D's website, you can read all about it and all the other gadgets he tests for us and for World News Now and all the other shows he appears on, because he's the world famous Gizwiz. By the way, somebody in the chat room says it's only $14.75 per arm.
Oh, there you go. And that makes it very reasonable.
Much more affordable now.
Yeah. If you're sitting next to a rich person, we rent it.
I'll only charge you $15 to have a...
For
the trip. No, per hour. Dick D. Bartolo, gizwiz.biz. Also play the What the Heck Is It contest at his website, because that's a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. That makes it pretty valuable when Dick signs that. Gizwiz, G-I-Z-W-I-Z dot B-I-Z. And his... don't forget... Oh, wait a minute. There's the Sorigami Passenger Anthem. What? They have a theme song, Dick. Should I play it?
I missed that.
Yeah.
How did I miss that? Do we have to stand?
Yeah. And put your hand over your heart. Ladies and gentlemen, the Sorigami National Anthem.
Hello, baby, don't you love to cry? Bags that like to wave goodbye.
Wow, they spend some money on this.
Nickel, and I'm you every time. Stuck behind slow pokes in line. That's why I don't like to fly.
I want to get paid for this ad.
Yes, we should. Don't be surprised if a dozen sorigami show up in your mailbox.
That's not how I want to get paid. Oh, look. Oh, God. Now it's just it's getting downhill. They're talking about
talk about a long way to try and get to a message. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you got to admire that. That's a marketing team. That's a good marketing team.
That is. That is.
That's, and by the way, they spent some money on a good singer. She's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dick D. Bartolo, gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. See you next week.
Always a pleasure. My. We are going to continue to take calls after the show's over. If you want to get through 8888 Ask Leo, I might have time for one more call before we wrap things up. But before we do that, I want to tell you a little bit about our sponsor. Who is that today, Johnny? Tell us who our sponsor is today. Leo, our sponsor is Carbonite. Carbonite online backup. I can't call them that anymore. No, because really there's so much more than online backup. I mean, that's the kind of the fundamental idea. But really, Carbonite is a data protection platform for business. That's really what it is. Solutions that get you back up and running fast, high availability solutions, data migration so you're never locked into any one server or cloud. They've got hybrid backup too, so you can back up locally and then to the cloud. And their newest solution, Carbonite Recover, they call it Disaster Recovery as a Service, DRAS. See, if you're in business, there's a lot of evil things that can happen to you out there. Of course, there's ransomware, violent weather events, employees who just don't know what the heck they're doing. Any one of those can threaten your business by threatening your data. You need that data, and every minute of downtime is a minute of lost revenue. So Carbonite's Disaster Recovery as a Service is all about getting you back up and running fast. Carbonite Recover has push-button cloud failover with return to operation time in minutes. The data is always current because synchronization with the source is constant. It's IT. It's engineered for complex IT environments with orchestration for multi-tier applications and automation. It even has automatic discovery of systems. So no, not that system down the hall, Joey's system. It's going to get backed up too. Data is continuously replicated at the byte level and secured with solid AES 256-bit encryption. It's Carbonite Recover. Find out more at carbonite.com. Learn about all the Carbonite data protection platform solutions at carbonite.com. Let's see if I can get one more in here before the end of the show from Danville, California. Hey, Bob.
Hello.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I have a MacBook Pro, an older 2011 MacBook Pro that I installed a SSD in as the second drive.
Yep, I've done that myself. Okay.
And now I'm trying to upgrade it to High Sierra.
Yeah.
And I did something, I guess. I don't know. But now I think I have loaded High Sierra on, but I am unable to now go to...
It wants to install it on the other drive, not the extra SSD you installed.
No, I want to do it on the SSD.
Yeah, but it won't. Because the SSD it thinks of as a it actually thinks of it as an optical drive. Because those Macs, you'd use the optical drive port. Swap the drives, then you'll be able to install it on the SSD. That's the only way to do it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We'll keep the calls going. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.